This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening, Africa, and welcome to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington, filling in for Yehias Wahib. Here's what's coming up.
Abraham deserted us. We are deserted. Although there are some hopes here and there from the government, we'll do something.
That's Zimbabwean Peter Mutisi on the lingering impact of last year's Cyclone Idai as attention now focuses on COVID-19. We also have a look at COVID-19 around the continent, including a story on how Nigeria's film industry is handling the pandemic. Those stories and more are next on Africa News Tonight. Our top story today, five African leaders are expected in Bamako today to try to end Mali's political crisis following weeks of protests demanding the embattled president's resignation. Nicolas Pinot reports from Paris.
In a joint visit, the presidents of Senegal, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Nigeria, and Niger are scheduled to meet their Malian counterparts, President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, and members of the June 5 movement. Keita has been locked for weeks in a standoff with the opposition group, and at least 11 people died this month during violent clashes. The June 5 movement demands Keita's resignation over the perception that the head of state has failed to tackle the dire economy, corruption, and an 8-year jihadist conflict. The new mission from the Economic Community of West African States is expected to find solutions politically acceptable for both sides, like a new unity cabinet, including opposition members. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
A new study by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies showed there are seven different trajectories for experiences dealing with COVID-19 in Africa, based on a combination of factors. Joseph Siegel, director of research at the center and co-author of the study, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi the two top categories. In the first, countries with somewhat better health systems like South Africa, Egypt, and Algeria account for the majority of coronavirus cases on the continent. In the second category, which includes Nigeria, Sudan, Cameroon, and Ethiopia, there is a relatively moderate percentage of infections.
When talking about the spread of coronavirus in Africa, we have to remember that we're talking about reported cases. That's a key distinction because we're only aware of the cases that have been documented. And so it gets to the point of the importance of testing capacity. And the countries that you mentioned have a relatively stronger health system. And so they're capable of doing more tests. And that's one of the reasons that we're seeing more positive cases in these countries. It isn't necessarily the case that they have worse transmissions than other countries that we're not hearing about. I think it's important to recognize that in these countries, they're also distinctive in that are what we call gateway countries in Africa. That means they have very high levels of international exposure. So they're getting a lot of travelers and trade businesses coming in and out. And so that has increased their international exposure and openness to the virus. And they also have large urban populations. So the combination of those three factors, strong health systems, international exposure, and large urban populations has contributed to the reason why we see them towards the top of the list in terms of number of reported cases.
So what are the factors behind the relatively moderate percentage of infection in countries like Nigeria, Sudan, Cameroon, and Ethiopia?
This is somewhat perplexing because these are large countries in terms of population, some of the largest on the continent with very complex social systems and large urban populations. Yet we've seen relatively lower reported cases from these countries. And I think the first point, again, is that it's a function of testing. You know, these countries have relatively weaker health systems, and so they're doing fewer cases. And so we're seeing fewer reported cases. But I think beyond that, these countries are distinctive because even though they're large, they have relatively lower levels of international exposure than some of the other large countries. And they have particularly low median age levels. So the age cohort in these countries are lower, which is contributing to the more muted effects we're seeing. That said, you know, these countries are, I think, still very vulnerable. They have the large urban population. All of them have some degree of conflict and displacement, which creates more vulnerability because you have large numbers of people congregated in small proximity. And they also have relatively weak press. And so the level of transparency and reporting on the pandemic is less. So again, we may be seeing transmissions there, or there may be transmissions happening that we're just not aware of.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy. As of today, the World Health Organization reported nearly 640,000 cases of COVID-19 in Africa, with nearly 11,000 deaths. However, there is speculation that the totals may be significantly higher. The South African Medical Research Council said that South Africa had about 17,000 extra deaths from early May to mid-June, 59% more than would normally be expected. Islamist extremists released a video showing the slaying of 5 aid workers who were abducted last month in northeastern Nigeria. Their abductions came around the same time that a Boko Haram splinter group said it would begin targeting Nigerians who work for international aid groups, as well as those who help the military. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari issued a statement identifying the victims as staff members of the country's State Emergency Management Agency and the International Charities Action Against Hunger, Rich International, and International Rescue Committee. He blamed Boko Haram and vowed to bring the killers to justice. Aid workers have frequently been targeted during the conflict between Boko Haram and Nigeria's government, especially by a Boko Haram splinter group affiliated to the Islamic State group. The war has left thousands dead, displaced many more, and resulted in a humanitarian crisis. Cameroon's medical authorities say over 200,000 children have not received routine vaccinations on schedule since March, when their country had its first case of COVID-19. Parents are refusing to take their kids to hospitals because they fear they may be infected with the virus, which has spread to nearly 17,000 people and caused nearly 400 deaths in Cameroon. Doctors warn that without the vaccinations, children in Cameroon risk preventable diseases such as diphtheria, measles, and tetanus. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
A four-month-old baby cries as she receives her second polio vaccine at the Chantal Biya Foundation Hospital in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. 27-year-old Elizabeth Mbungong says she is getting her baby's booster shot nearly 3 months late because she was scared of going to the hospital during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I gave birth in the month of March, and the first vaccine was given to the baby against tetanus. They gave me another rendezvous in the month of April. I did not respect because I was afraid of the coronavirus.
Mbungong said after she watched a TV program on the dangers of not vaccinating children, she decided that going to the hospital was worth the risk. Pediatrician Clemence Vukmo says many parents are letting fear of the virus prevent them from getting their children vaccinated.
Nous avons constaté une baisse extrêmement importante.
She says Chantal Biya Foundation Hospital should have had 2,300 children for routine vaccinations since March, but they have seen only about half the children. Cameroon's medical officials say the problem has been widespread during the pandemic. Cameroon's National Expanded Program for Immunization reports across the country at least 200,000 children have not received their vaccinations as scheduled. Deputy Permanent Secretary of the program, Shalom Chokfe, says they have deployed staff to look for the children. He spoke via telephone from Douala, a coastal city and the largest in Cameroon.
54,000
Chokfe says the situation is especially troubling in the capital Yaoundé, the economic hub Douala, and the western town of Bafoussam. He says 110,000 children in those cities have not received their routine vaccines since the month of March, when Cameroon reported its first case of COVID-19. Teams can meet the children in their houses, says Chokfe. Parents and health workers are safe during routine vaccinations at hospitals, he says, as long as they wear their masks and wash their hands regularly. Chokwe notes that vaccinations dramatically reduce child mortality and urges all parents to get their infants vaccinated on schedule. The United Nations warned this month of an alarming decline in the number of children getting vaccinated for preventable diseases such as diphtheria, tetanus, and the measles. According to a study published by the Lancet Global Health Journal this month, continuing with routine immunizations may lead to 8,300 additional deaths in Africa from COVID-19. But the study said suspending vaccinations could lead to a further 702,000 African children dying from preventable diseases. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thanks for tuning in. For more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Droughts and economic crisis and now COVID-19 have battered just about everyone in Zimbabwe and left donor funds scarce. Particularly hard hit have been the survivors of the deadly cyclone Idai, which swamped the country's eastern highlands and neighboring Mozambique just over a year ago. Many are feeling abandoned. Reporter Kudzai Zvinovashe has more.
Survivors are still staying in tented camps despite the goodwill of churches, non-profit organizations, and crowdfunding efforts. Peter Mutisi is a resident in Chimanimani, one of the areas which were affected by the cyclone. He explains the impact of Idai.
Life became tough for the survivors and the population at large. Everything has been taken away, including human life, property such as homes, vehicles, and all belongings. Businesses, they lost almost everything. People were relying on donor aid, well-wishers, government, through social welfare.
The latest disaster, COVID-19, can be blamed for reduced efforts on helping the survivors. Mutisi says they are worse off than when Cyclone Idai struck.
The situation is now different. A lot of organizations, some of them they have left. Some were doing lean season. They have got specific periods to assist the people. Then after that, they left more organizations into this humanitarian organization. They are leaving. Everyone has deserted us. We are deserted. Although there are some talks here and there from the government, we will do something.
He says all this is unfolding while people remain in need.
People, they still need help from well-wishers, those who can assist. This time, we are fast approaching rain season. They need assistance. Food is still needed, clothing, other non-food items, relocation issues.
Even the dead are in need. Some victims are still missing after the floods swept them away, some all the way across the border into Mozambique. Mutisi says survivors still need closure for their loved ones.
The main issue again about the missing persons, our relatives who perished on 15 March 2019, they are still down there in Mozambique. People are still requesting the government to do something like the repatriation of their bodies and do something like DNA so that they can have a decent burial.
For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinovashe from Harare.
The South African International Ballet Competition was forced online this year due to COVID-19. It was the first to go entirely virtual, but that didn't mean a low turnout. The competition earlier this month attracted competitors from 30 countries around the world, the largest participation ever for the biennial event. Journalist Maryse de Klerk reports from Johannesburg.
The COVID-19 pandemic's cancellation of most events almost crushed South African ballet dancer Sikumbuzo Hlahleni's dream to compete worldwide. Instead, he became part of ballet history when the South African International Ballet Competition this year leapt into cyberspace. But taking part in a dance competition by recorded video, says Hlahleni via Zoom, was not easy.
I haven't been on stage for quite some time, and because of this COVID, and I told myself that the only thing I need to do here is to have fun. And for me, it was quite challenging because audience wasn't there, the judges wasn't there. So I felt so lonely.
Africa's premier global ballet contest is held every 2 years with age categories ranging from primary school children to adults. But because of safety concerns due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the competition was moved online. The number of participants almost doubled. The SAIBC's CEO, Dirk Badenhorst, explains through Zoom.
There were 255 videos that our panelists had to view. The number of countries represented doubled. Due to the fact that it's online, people didn't have to fly, so they saved a lot of money in the actual cost of attending.
Contestants recorded one classical and one modern performance to upload 2 weeks before the competition. A jury of global dance judges watched the recordings and then uploaded their video reviews. Jury chairperson and director of the Dutch National Ballet, Ted Branson, was at first skeptical of an online dance contest. But speaking via Zoom, he said he changed his mind.
It is a format that can actually work and that actually can give more opportunities to people who otherwise would be missing out. So it is a really valuable lesson. It has its pros and cons, but I think for this particular event, it has worked out really, really well.
Four, take a balance, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4.
During the week-long contests, experts like the Zurich Academy of Ballet's Roberta Martens offered online training and panel discussions. South African-born ballet dancer Toriso Mahongwa says the virtual initiative is a ballet game changer.
This is a huge platform for possibilities. So I think it's really literally opened the floodgates for possibilities for our students. To keep ballet as part of our lives, we've got to let it evolve.
The South African International Ballet Competition ended July 18 with a virtual awards ceremony and an online gala concert. Marisa de Klerk for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Nigeria's aspiring young filmmakers have been gaining international attention even as Nigeria's film industry, known as Nollywood, tries to cope with the realities of COVID-19. Adjusting the world's second most productive film business to social distancing is costly, but it's also sparking more creativity, as Ifeok Itang reports from Jos, Nigeria.
Nigerian comedy siblings The Ikorodu Boys went viral in June for their online parody of the Hollywood action thriller Extraction, using household items and toys as props and their environment in Ikorodu, Lagos for sets. The video has so far been viewed more than 11 million times on Twitter. Nigeria's own film industry, Nollywood, has also had to get creative with staying productive and safe during the COVID-19 pandemic. Actor Bashir Dati rehearses his lines as 10 others, including camera crew, set up a scene in an open field on the outskirts of Jos, Nigeria. Dati says the coronavirus has cost him a lot of work.
This is my first set since this coronavirus started. And what I experienced today is it's not an easy task, like social distancing, putting on face mask. You will not interact with people like you normally used to do it before on set. We just learn to live with the virus, and life goes on. So we need to adjust ourselves and keep on going. Because if you said, because of the fear of the coronavirus, you will not come on set. You have nothing to do apart from filmmaking.
Nollywood produces the second largest number of films in the world each year after India's Bollywood and employs over 1 million people. But the coronavirus shut down cinemas globally and forced many filmmakers to delay productions.
You know, recently there's been this whole conversation about what is going to happen, what are filmmakers supposed to do, and we're having this conversation that right now, before you get on set, you have to test your cast and crew, you have to isolate them in a particular place for maybe 14 days and all of that before you get on set. So there's been a lot of spike in the budget that filmmakers would normally spend.
Action.
Cost has forced some Nollywood directors to cut back on the quantity of films. But aspiring filmmaker William Chidube says he sees it as an opportunity to work smarter.
We can always all work, you know, we can always all multitask, you know, we can do a lot of things, especially now you don't have the luxury to deal with a large crew. You can begin to do more than one thing that you know that you're strong, you know, that you're good at, and you're good at editing and you're good at shooting, but so you do the both of them.
Creatively scripting scenes for social distancing is key to coping with the realities of COVID-19, says writer-director Umar Turaki.
So what's to stop a group of people, you know, writing a story around maybe a particular piece of scenery, around a particular hill, around a particular tree? You know, I'm producing that. You know, it's safer to be out there anyway. You know, but really, I feel like the most important thing is to be able to challenge ourselves in terms of the writing and in terms of conceptualization in a way that allows us to produce work that doesn't expose us, you know, to the dangers of COVID-19.
While Nollywood has taken a hit from the pandemic, Nigerian filmmakers are confident that if they use their creative energies, the industry will recover and thrive. Ifeok Etang for VOA News, Jos, Nigeria.
The Kenya Wildlife Service, or KWS, is being criticized after it began implanting contraceptives in female lions to protect other endangered species. KWS says fewer lion births means fewer predators hunting wildlife who are at risk of extinction, but conservationists point out that lions themselves are dwindling in number and say there are better ways to protect endangered animals. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Kenya's Wildlife Managing Authority, KWS, is defending the use of contraceptives on six lionesses in Lewa Conservancy in northwest Laikipia County. The service's director of biodiversity research and planning, Patrick Omondi, say they had to use an implant to curb the breeding of lions to save the rhinos.
We have less than 1,000 black rhinos in Kenya. And if you lose in 1 year four of them because of lions, again, it's a delicate balance. And I think all this we do, and we take the interest of the species at heart as a wildlife management authority.
The hormones contraceptives will work for 1 year for the six lionesses aged five. Kenya has at least 2,000 lions in the country. Philip Murudhi is a vice president of Species Conservation and Science at the Africa Wildlife Foundation. He says any measures taken to limit the population of animals should be used with caution.
I think what we are coming to is that it can be done, it can be a tool, but has to be done very carefully. It is not your first choice tool. You don't give a contraceptive and just leave the animal without tracking whether it is working. It involves, there are some dangers in it. Remember, the animal has to be triangulated, and so every capture has got its misgivings.
Kenya's wildlife is also threatened by attacks from poachers and the communities living around the animal parks. Murudhi says one option is to move the animals to new habitats farther away from endangered species. But Omondi of KWS says that isn't always a good idea.
Movement of predators has not been very, it's not recommended really, because they take time to settle in new areas. They end up straying in outside the protected area and then end up being killed in new areas where they range.
In 2018, eight black rhinos out of 14 transferred to the Tsavo East National Park died after drinking salty water. Omondi says if the contraceptives work, it will be an option that KWS considers when trying to manage lion populations. The Africa Wildlife Foundation estimates that in the last two decades, the continent's lion population has decreased 43%, down to just 23,000. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yabaro, and our entire team, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you for listening and for choosing the Voice of America. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.